ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we'll feature a conversation with Rich Roll. He's co-author, with his wife Julie Piet, of the book The Plant Power Way, Whole Food, Plant-Based Recipes, and Guidance for the Whole Family, part cookbook, part lifestyle guide. This beautiful book is the first to provide plant-based, whole food recipes the whole family will love. Rich is also the author of Finding Ultra, a book in which he chronicled his incredible transformation from an out-of-shape, overworked lawyer to a plant-based, ultra-marathon-running elite athlete. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
In a shocking report released last week, the notoriously secretive USDA agency Wildlife Services admitted to having killed close to 3 million animals in 2014, but that number may be even higher. Every year, Wildlife Services kills millions of animals to protect agribusiness and to bolster hunting opportunities. Annually, the agency spends $100 million to kill wildlife. Lost among the millions of wild animals shot, poisoned, or snared in traps is a number of domestic animals whose deaths were listed as unintentional. According to Wildlife Service's own data, 16 pets or livestock were killed last year, in addition to 1,000 feral dogs and cats. The number of pets killed by Wildlife Services is likely much higher than the agency reports, especially given the indiscriminate methods used to kill. Wildlife Services likes to say that they selectively target animals, but that's just not possible with the poisons and traps they use. They're supposed to post warning signs of traps and poisons, but they routinely do not. And how do they determine if a dog or a cat is feral if they aren't wearing a collar? Predator Defense, a conservation group opposed to Wildlife Service's deadly practices, details dozens of incidents where family pets died as a result of the agency's actions. Indiscriminate killing methods and the ambiguity of a pet's origins aside, there's another reason why the deaths may be underreported, and it's far from an accident. A former trapper with Wildlife Services, Rex Shaddax, has become a whistleblower on agency practices. Rex said that concealing the deaths of pets was standard procedure, that agents were told to take collars off to get rid of the collars and to bury the dogs and never report it. Failing to report and actively hiding pet deaths has continued since this whistleblower left the agency, says Predator Defense Executive Director Brooks Fahey, who said, "I've been told by at least a half dozen Wildlife Services trappers that it's still happening. They only report pet deaths when there's been a witness." For more information, please Google Wildlife Services and let your congressional representatives know that you'd like to see the Wildlife Services program discontinued.
Science Insider magazine reports in an unprecedented move, an expert panel that advises the International Whaling Commission's Scientific Committee has rejected Japan's latest plan for resuming the killing of minke whales in the Antarctic. Phil Clapham, a cetacean biologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, says it's a stunner And never before has a body associated with the scientific committee told Japan that they had failed to demonstrate a need for killing whales. Japan has long argued that its whaling activities are necessary for scientific research. It killed some 10,000 minke whales in the Antarctic between 1987 and 2014, for example, citing a special International Whaling Commission clause that permits scientific whaling. That program took a legal blow in 2014, however, when Australia won a ruling from the International Court of Justice and found that Japan's harpooning project was not for the purposes of scientific research. As a result, Japan ended its existing Antarctic whaling program and this year collected only non-lethal samples from minke whales in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. But Japan officials also prepared a new plan for future research whaling in the Antarctic and submitted it to the expert panel as required by the International Whaling Commission rules. The plan calls for killing 333 minke whales annually over the next 12 years, down from their previous annual target of 935 minke whales and 100 fin and humpback whales. The kill would help address two broad research objectives, argued scientists at Japan's Institute of Cetacean Research. One is to allow researchers to collect additional data on minke whales, including their stomach contents and the age at which they attain sexual maturity, to determine sustainable minke catch quotas if commercial whaling were to resume. Their second goal is to enable scientists to investigate the whale's role in the Antarctic marine ecosystem. However, the panel meeting in February in Tokyo found the plan wanting. Japan does not demonstrate the need for lethal sampling to meet its research objectives, the group concluded in its report. In particular, the panel argued that the Japanese scientists had not provided sufficient information to evaluate either of the proposed research objectives. It recommended that Japan suspend its scientific whaling program for two or more years while improving the proposal and to test the use of non-lethal methods. Whale biologists and conservationists applauded the news. Japanese officials, however, were unconvinced. They agreed to include some of the panel's recommendation in a revised proposal to be presented at the International Whaling Commission's full scientific committee meeting next month. However, Japan does not need approval from the panel or from the International Whaling Committee Scientific Committee to forge ahead because there's a clause for scientific whaling that leaves it up to each country to oversee such activities. So Japan's whaling fleet is already scheduled to depart for the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary later this year and begin a new hunt for minke whales.
A Washington County, Texas veterinarian is at the center of a social media firestorm, has lost her job, and could face charges after bragging about killing a cat with a bow and arrow. Dr. Kristen Lindsay, DVM, posted a picture on her Facebook page of her holding an arrow that is sticking through the head of a dead cat. The post reads, "My first bow kill, laugh out loud. The only good feral tomcat is one with an arrow through its head. Vet of the Year award, gladly accepted." The post quickly went viral and prompted numerous calls to the Brenham Police Department and Washington County Animal Control. Brenham police say the cat was shot in Austin County. The Austin County Sheriff's Office told KBTX-TV that it's investigating. Lindsay worked for the Washington Animal Clinic in Brenham, but she was fired. The clinic's website was getting so much traffic that it crashed. Lindsay later removed her posts and then pulled down her Facebook page. We'll keep you posted on future legal actions affecting Dr. Lindsay. Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Rich Roll, co-author of The Plant Power Way. Joining us now on ACT Radio is Rich Roll. Thanks for being with us, Rich.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you today.
Rich, can you start out by telling our listeners a little bit about your fascinating journey to becoming a vegan?
Sure. It was about 9 years ago, and I originally made the switch for health reasons. I was 39 years old at the time, and I was quite unhealthy. I'd been living on what I like to call the window diet, which means if you drive your car up to a fine dining establishment, roll the window down and they hand you food, that's what you eat. And that's the way I had been eating for most of my adult life. And it was catching up to me, and I was living a kind of a very unhealthy workaholism type lifestyle. And I had a moment on the staircase late one evening where I had to take a break up a simple flight of stairs, buckled over, tightness in my chest, sweat on my brow, and really the fear of God. You know, I thought I might be on the precipice of having a heart attack. And it was really a very, powerful moment where I realized not only that I needed to change how I was living, but that I really wanted to change. And, you know, it's not like I went vegan overnight, but that was really the beginning of starting to explore the relationship of food and health. And that's what brought me into the beautiful world of eating plant-based.
And there's so many options, I think, for people when they're in a crisis like that and they're trying to figure out how to live healthier. What pushed you more towards, you know, going vegan as opposed to paleo diet or Atkins?
Well, I think that maybe I would have saved a lot of time if I'd been listening to you guys or maybe gone to the library and checked some books out. I was really just experimenting on myself, and initially I played around with a vegetarian diet, but that quickly devolved into kind of a junk food vegetarian diet. And going plant-based was kind of my Hail Mary. It was really, you know, this idea of, I wonder what would happen if I got rid of all the processed foods and the dairy and the meat. And I really didn't think it would make a difference in how I felt, but it was a very dramatic difference, actually. Within 7 days of making that switch, I felt like a completely different person. And that's when I realized, you know, that it was really agreeing with me. And I just stuck with it and built upon that and tried to learn more from there. And then I started reading the books like The China Study and Thrive by Brendan Brasier and Engine 2 Diet and all these, you know, other kind of, you know, plant-based vegan health books. And I just got hooked. I was convinced that this is the, you know, the optimal way, not only to feel great, but to really take an insurance policy out on my long-term health.
And how did your family respond to this? Sometimes when people try to transition to a different diet, sometimes their family's supportive and sometimes their family's like, oh, this is a fad. What's he doing?
Well, I was very lucky. My wife, not only was she incredibly supportive, she had been trying to get me to, you know, improve my diet for quite some time. And she wasn't entirely plant-based at this time, but she was eating pretty close to it. And so she was thrilled that finally, you know, I was sort of taking stock and, you know, how I was eating. So she's always been the inspiration and she really supported me. So I'm very lucky in that regard.
Yeah, because it can be a hard transition. And like you said, you had been eating basically, it sounds like, fast food for quite a while there. And to go from fast food to eating healthy takes a lot of time and grocery shopping, food preparation, thinking about what you're going to eat, like you said.
Yeah, on some level, I think that's true. But in another way, I think it simplified everything. You know, it made it very easy. Like, part of my story also is that I'm a recovering alcoholic. And, you know, one of the things that you learn in recovery, in addiction recovery, is there's really no gray area. You're either drinking or you're sober. you can't kind of drink. So in that way, like, the mental construct of veganism is very similar. Like, it made it simple. It's like, well, I just don't eat animal products. And it removed the decision fatigue out of it. And then shopping actually became easy. It's like, I could just go into a grocery store and I go right to the produce section and I could pick up, you know, a bunch of bananas and dates and some almonds and put them in my car and I'm fine. You know, so we're not a family who spends a lot of time preparing ahead and creating meals for the week. And, you know, we're busy. We've got four kids. My wife is a genius artist in the kitchen, but she's not slaving away all day. So I think that on some level, that's sort of a myth that all of a sudden you got to spend all this money and spend all this time.
You know, I think it becomes easier. There might be an initial period where you're learning about it, but then it becomes rather routine to choose healthy choices.
Yeah, I mean, there is an adjustment. And, you know, I think that you kind of have to weather through that. You know, you have to weather through maybe early cravings that you're going to have for some of those foods that you're used to eating and kind of, you know, kind of adapt into this lifestyle. And for some people, that's, like flicking a switch. And for others, it takes a long time. It's gradual. And we like to call it an evolution revolution.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. How did it tie into your deciding to go into ultra fitness?
Well, what happened was once I started eating plant-based, suddenly my body was vibrating with so much energy. I felt this restoration of my vitality and just felt better than I'd felt since I was a little kid. And honestly, I had so much energy, I almost had to go outside and start moving my body, you know, because I couldn't sit still. And And, you know, early on, I didn't have any designs on returning to becoming a competitive athlete. You know, I'd been a swimmer in college. I just really wanted to, you know, feel what it was like to reconnect with myself in a physical sense. And, you know, I wanted to lose the gut. You know, I put on 50 pounds. I wanted to lose the weight around my belly. And I wanted to just be able to have, you know, good energy to enjoy my children. And, but what happened was, the more I kind of got outside and started running, and my wife bought me a bike for my 40th birthday, I just was enjoying it. And I had a moment about 3 or 4 months into this experiment where I went out for a run, and I'd been getting out and getting fit progressively, but nothing very extreme. But I had one of those days where everything just kind of clicked in, and I went out for a run and ended up running like 24 miles out of the blue. And I thought, wow, you know, like, I didn't even know that I could do something like that. Either I've just unlocked some dormant gene that I didn't know I had.
Yeah, really.
Or, you know, eating plant-based is really agreeing with me. And it was very strange because my whole life, you know, as a youngster being an athlete, you know, and just everybody, we're told, oh, you know, you got to eat animal protein to get strong muscles, and, you know, milk does the body good, and beef is what's for dinner, and here I was, I'd removed all those things from my diet, and not only was I feeling better than I ever had, my body was performing better. And that really kind of, you know, was a watershed moment where I realized not only, you know, that food truly is medicine, to echo Hippocrates, but there is a huge capacity for human beings to, you know, sort of achieve things beyond their imagination. And that kind of planted the seed for a goal. I wonder, you know, because I'd abused myself for so long with drugs and alcohol and terrible lifestyle habits. In a very short period of time, I seemed to have done a complete 180. And I thought, you know, what if I tested this? What if I challenged myself? Like, what could I actually do? And that's what led me into the world of ultra endurance and, you know, kind of trying to test the limits of my, you know, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual capability.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it worked. You were named by Men's Fitness as one of the 25 fittest men in the world.
Yes, that's a very, you know, it's kind of a pulpy, you know, moniker that I was given. Men's Fitness magazine, you know, they do an issue every year where they list the 25 fittest guys in the world. And I certainly don't believe that I'm actually one of the 25 fittest men in the world. It's like, it's kind of peppered with celebrities. And every year they pick a guy who's not a professional athlete. It's just an average guy who maybe has done something extraordinary. And they put me as that guy that year. But I will tell you this. If you're going to write a book, it's very helpful.
Yeah. And then, of course, PETA's moniker didn't hurt either, probably.
Well, take what you can get. Yeah.
Which was Sexiest Vegan or something like that for 2011.
I don't know.
Everyone's Googling it right now. So well, speaking of transitioning to a book, you wrote a book called Finding Ultra. Was this what chronicled your story in moving to a plant-based diet?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really just a memoir. It's my personal story of, you know, how I went from, you know, the ups and downs of my life. It's kind of three different books. It's a story of addiction and recovery. It's a story of, you know, athletic achievement. And it's sort of a primer on plant-based nutrition for athletic performance. And that book came out 3 years ago, and it did quite well and sort of, you know, put me in the middle of this plant-based movement, which has been great. But, you know, people read the book, they were inspired, and they said, I'm into it, I'm ready to go, but, like, tell me exactly what I need to eat now. So, you know, like, the book did not contain recipes, it was not a cookbook. So, you know, the book that we're putting out now, The Plant Power Way, is really picked up where Finding Ultra leads off by not only extending my story into our family story, but also answering that question of, you know, what exactly do you eat? And this is what we eat. And we're proud to be sharing it with the world now.
Right. And this is a book that you and your wife wrote, correct?
Yes, exactly. It's very much our family. You know, it's a cookbook. It's 330 pages with over 120 delicious, nutritious, plant-based recipes that are very accessible. They're very family friendly. And it's very authentic to our family journey because, you know, when I started training, Julie had to figure out how am I going to feed this guy when he's going out and killing himself every day. But also, what can I create that also is going to please my kids and it's not going to take all day? So it had to kind of fire on all cylinders, and she cultivated, you know, a vast array of amazing dishes, and this is what we eat. You know, I think what you see is a lot of times when somebody kind of in the health world puts out a cookbook, they have to partner with a chef, right? Because they're not chefs themselves. So we didn't have to do that. Like, this is exactly, you know, how we did it. And the idea is to create a welcome mat for the uninitiated. You know, I'm a proud member of the vegan movement and the plant-based movement, but I'm really interested in trying to connect with people who are outside of that and bring them in a way, you know, that they can hear it and that they can understand it. So the book is also very much a lifestyle guide. It's full of tools and resources and opinion pieces, and it has beautiful lifestyle photography in it, so that somebody who's not a vegan or not plant-based or maybe never thought in a million years that that would be something they would be interested in, they can leaf through it and be inspired and say, you know what, this looks cool. I think I can do this. Not only does it look cool, it looks fun, it looks modern, and you know, I'm inspired. And, you know, we tried to answer all the questions that we always get, and I think at the top of that list is, you know, how can I get my kids to eat healthier?
I thought it was going to be, where do I get my protein?
Oh, yeah, well, we do answer that, of course. Like, yeah. That's probably the number one question. But after that, especially with families, it's like, you know, everybody wants to figure out how they can get their kids to eat healthier.
And I think that's a neat thing about this book is I'm thinking about a lot of the vegan cookbooks that I have at my house, and I don't think they're so much geared towards prepping for a family. You know, it's, I think it's very much more individual based. And so I think that was the neat thing about your book too. And the photo, I mean, and like you say, the photographs are just beautiful. It's really, I mean, it's a beautiful cookbook and, or, you know, it's a beautiful book in addition to having all the substance to it.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, the idea was we wanted to create a book that you would feel good leaving out on your coffee table, that, you know, you wouldn't hide in your kitchen cupboard. So that, you know, you can leaf through it. And like I said, you know, be inspired. And I think, you know, when talk turned to us doing this kind of a book, you know, there are a lot of amazing vegan cookbooks out there. And, you know, I didn't want to just do a book that would sort of recycle what was already available. I tried to think, what hasn't been said? Like, how can we contribute to this conversation in a way, you know, that nobody has done yet? And I think the family angle and the accessibility angle is really what, you know, where I saw a need.
And I like the title of the book, too, because people don't often associate plants with power. And, you know, just reading some of the snippets, like, for instance, when you talk in the book about chia seeds and just really how powerful and how amazing they are for our bodies. What are some of your favorite foods when it comes to finding that power that's going to fuel you on a healthy lifestyle and for all your outdoor activities?
Well, I think starting my day with a green smoothie packed with dark leafy greens is kind of a basic. And, you know, we have lots of recipes on that. Inverting, you know, the idea of a breakfast to supercharge your day with superfoods. You know, I love the chia seeds, and we have a whole section on all these superfoods that can really, you know, dial up your well-being with things like maca root and hemp seeds and spirulina and chlorella and cordyceps mushrooms and all these amazing exotic plant foods that I really think can be, you know, the extra 1% when it comes to, you know, excellence in an athletic context. But also, you know, I like the hearty stuff. I mean, these recipes are not super precious. You know, they're very hearty, and they're things that they're healthier versions of things that, you know, most families eat, like potato salad. And I think one of my favorites is the untuna recipe, which is these untuna wraps that taste remarkably like tuna fish, but they're made with celery and walnuts, and they're just absolutely, you know, a delicious, nutritious lunch. They're simple, but they're really, really good.
I like the idea of, like you said, is flipping around breakfast, because you always hear all the stuff like breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and then you see like a plate of eggs and bacon and a big stack of pancakes with butter and syrup, and you're like, starting your day off eating that just seems like you're going to go into a nap time coma or something.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'd have to get right back in bed if I eat that.
So I think it's great to think about what you eat at the beginning of the day, when you can really get your day off to, like you said, a nice, compassionate and energetic start by eating something that's actually going to give you inspiration to do things rather than sit like a lump in your stomach for 4 hours. And
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a little bit of an adjustment for people to, kind of accept the idea of drinking a salad for breakfast. But, what I always tell people is, the other thing about the book is it's not placing demands on anybody. It's not saying you have to be vegan or you have to be 100%. Like, what I say to people who are new is, just if all you do is start your day with a really healthy green smoothie in the morning, just start there. And I think when they start to do that and they get to see how much better they feel in the morning, then that will, light a spark and set them on a trajectory where, they have the willingness to kind of dig deeper and go on their own journey with this. Because I think, the kind of implicit message of the book is really to empower people. It's not you have to do it exactly like this. You have your own version of this story. Start here. Here's some tips. And go from there, be creative, take what we're doing and do it in your own way.
Yeah. And then I also think that's really great that on your, webpage, you have all these podcasts and interviews with people to try to inspire them, like you said at the beginning of the show, to really explore who they really are and what kind of life they really want to lead.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing a podcast now for about 2.5 years. I've got 140 long-form conversations up there. So that's, hundreds of hours of conversations with people that I think are the most inspiring pioneers and paradigm breakers in this world. Lots of plant-based doctors and nutritionists and athletes and all kinds of interesting people. And I do this freely because I'm so passionate about, what has transformed my life. And I really want to be able to share that with people. And that's been, a really extraordinary experience.
Well, Rich, if you tell our listeners where they can find these podcasts.
Sure. If you go to my website, richroll.com, you can find it all there. The podcast is also on iTunes. It's just the Rich Roll podcast. It's very easy to find. It's one of the top-ranked shows in the health section on iTunes, so you can find it there. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find it online.
Yeah, some of them are really great. I really recommend our listeners to take a moment and listen to a few of those podcasts.
We've been talking with Rich Roll, co-author of The Plant Power Way. Thanks a lot for being with us, Rich.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great to talk to you guys today.
Thanks, Rich.
As Earth Week comes to a close, remember that the best thing that you can do for the environment is switch to a plant-based diet.
If you'd like more information about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website, vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the Earth, the Animals, and a Healthier Humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.